I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. It's election day, and we want to hear your stories out at the polls. Is everything running smoothly, or do those lines feel like an amusement park? Call or tweet us your experience from out at the ballot box. Also, if there's trouble in election land, who do you turn to? We learned about the project that has banded 250 media organizations together, including KCUR, to report on voting problems. Then, if the lines aren't scary enough, we take a step into the world of a renowned Gothic horror author who's not named Stephen King. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Good morning and welcome to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. It's a big day here in Kansas City and across the country as the nation pauses to elect a new president, members of Congress, governors, state legislators, and a whole lot more. We're eager to hear your stories about what you're seeing out there at polling places across the metro. How long are those lines and how long are those ballots? We're also curious about what surprised you about your voting experience and where you're spending tonight watching the returns roll in. Give us a call at 816-235-2888 and fill us in. Option two is to send us a tweet at KCURUpToDate. While the calls are rolling in, let's start with a quick update of what we've seen this morning around the metro. And for that, let's turn to KCUR's Kyle Palmer. And Kyle, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Steve.
Lots of stuff happening out there.
Well, as what we expected, there was a very high turnout this morning before dawn. People lining up in precincts around the Kansas City metro, especially in Missouri, of course, because Missouri does not have early voting as in Kansas. And so, as we've seen in previous presidential election years, there were a lot of people out early that kind of died down a bit around 9, 9:30. Election officials say that they expect kind of a steady trickle in all day, but then another big rush at the end of the workday, late afternoon, around 4 or 5, and that could go until polling places, many of them close at 7. But we did see a lot of action this morning, tweets coming in both from our reporters and just from regular citizens out and about in Kansas City, Liberty, Raytown, Lee Summit, Independence. There were long lines everywhere.
You can't help but wonder, Kyle, if this will be the election that finally springs early voting in Missouri. People are going to be a little frustrated having to wait an hour or two come rush hour tonight.
Well, and I think it becomes more apparent with the contrast to Kansas, right? Because you had more than 450,000 people vote early, according to state election officials. 43% of the registered electorate in Johnson County alone voted before today. And that was borne out in the experience of a lot of Kansas voters, either people who work here who came from Kansas and they voted before they came in, or people that we just see on Twitter. Walk right into the voting place in Kansas today, you know, pick up a ballot or do whatever and vote and walk right out in 5 to 10 minutes. It's not the experience in Kansas City or in other Missouri locales. Not to say by any stretch that it's, you know, deterring people. We haven't seen any reports of, you know, people being turned away because lines are too long or any sort of problems that drastic this early in the day. But yes, you raise an interesting point. The contrast between both states so apparent with this election as early voting becomes more and more popular.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. What are you experiencing out there? What are you seeing at the polls? How long are their lines? 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Kyle, you've talked to some voters.
Well, I have not personally talked to voters, but we've gotten a lot of reporters out around town this morning. And of course, we know this has been a long, sometimes frustrating, baffling, bizarre election process over the last 12 to 18 months.
You think?
And Kansas City voter Bob Brown, who was talked to by one of our reporters at the Gregory Hills Church near Swope Park early this morning before dawn, I think he really sums it up better than I can.
There's a lot of mudslinging, and it's really unnecessary, but I think a lot of people will see through the weeds and see the duck on the other end and ready to get him for dinner. It's one of those things, but no, it's I exercised my right and I done it, and I'm ready to go back to work and get on with the day.
The duck on the other end. I like that. Yeah. That's a new one on me.
For the Second Amendment people out there, that's a hunting reference. So.
I think I sort of got that, yeah. Well, I want to bring in KCUR's Alex Smith, who joins us now from his polling place in the 65th and Linden neighborhood in Kansas City's Brookside area. Alex, good morning. Nice to have you.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm well. And what are you seeing there in Brookside? What's the mood like? Who's turning out?
Well, a woman who lives just a few doors down, Janice Newberry, told me sort of similar to what Kyle said, that earlier this morning there was a line halfway down the street. Now it's a lot shorter. There's a steady stream of people going in and out, and they're telling me the whole process just takes about 25 to 30 minutes. So I don't really hear a lot of frustration here. People seem to be actually in a pretty good mood and happy to vote.
Alex, you mean the process of voting takes 25 or 30 minutes?
Oh, just in and out the door voting, the whole thing.
The total
it's
time,
actually going
yeah.
pretty quickly here.
Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. Oh, what are the poll workers saying about today? Have you had a chance to visit with any of them?
Well, I haven't actually been able to get inside myself to talk with poll workers yet. But, you know, when I talk to people who have voted in this area for a long time, they say that, you know, what they're seeing here today is pretty similar to what they've seen in previous years. So not a huge difference, actually, in this neighborhood right now.
Well, tell us about some of the voters you've actually had a chance to talk with this morning.
Well, it's interesting because people here do seem like they're in a really good mood, you know, just smiling and waving to others, you know, when they walk in and out. But when you actually talk to people about, you know, sort of the significance of the election, you know, this is an election that people clearly are not taking lightly. Just actually a couple minutes ago, I saw what looked like, you know, maybe an older mother and her adult daughter leaving the church with tears in their eyes. And they caught their attention of another woman who was also crying, and all the women sort of waved and congratulated each other. And just as I talk to people about the significance of the election, you know, they say that this is a really big deal for them. And you know, they feel like this is their chance to make a difference. So it's interesting to hear about that.
You've also spoken to one voter that we're actually going to hear from, right, Alex?
Yeah, that's right. This is Jill. She has been voting in this neighborhood for a while. And she's, yeah, again, one of these folks who says, you know, that this is a big deal for her.
So for me, I think the choices are so disparate that I felt like my voice mattered more this time and I also felt like I could make a difference this time. Where other times it feels like hopeless, this time it felt like it mattered to vote.
Okay. Well, that's Alex Smith reporting from the Brookside neighborhood. And Alex, nice to have you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's go to some phone calls here from some folks who are out and about. One of our reporters, Sylvia Maria Gross from Central Standard, joins us now from the Brookside area. Sylvia, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm here at 59th and Harrison at Olive Branch Church here.
And what are you seeing, Sylvia?
Well, pretty quiet. People coming out. It took them about 30 minutes. Smooth sailing. They got in line. 30 minutes later, they were coming out. I saw... The only unusual thing was a mom and her son looking for something he lost this morning at the polls. So, yeah, besides that, pretty smooth.
So you're not seeing long lines, people complaining of how long it's taking to vote, at least on the Missouri side, based on where you are this morning?
No, right here it's pretty relaxed, about 30 people in line.
Okay. That's Sylvia Maria Gross from KCUR. Thanks very much, Sylvia.
You're welcome.
Let's go back to some calls here. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. If you want to call in and report what you're seeing, what you're hearing out at the polling places on both sides of our state line today, again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Carrie from the Waldo neighborhood. Carrie, good morning.
Good morning. I am on my way back to work after just finishing up voting. The whole process from the time I parked the time I got back into my car was 23 minutes.
Well, that's not bad,
so
Carrie.
It was, well, I kind of planned it that way. I had to be at work for an 8 o'clock meeting and was a little nervous about making sure I got in on time because I work downtown. So I thought, well, I can go into work, get the meeting done, and then come back maybe during a morning lull. And my plan worked exactly the way I hoped it would. So I was very pleased. Everybody seemed in an upbeat mood, you know, kind of a nice mix of kind of demographics, young families with little babies in strollers, obviously retired folks,
right.
People like me that were trying to find that kind of perfect window of opportunity to not take forever. Because when I drove by the polling place on my way to work this morning, the line was out the door and about 50 feet down the sidewalk.
So what time did you show up?
I got there at 10:37.
And did you, at 10:37, did you do your homework ahead of time? Did you know what you were going to vote for?
Yeah, I did. And
that helps a little bit, they say.
It helped a lot. There were about 15 people in front of me in the line. The line moved really fast. I didn't really stand still, you know, more than, you know, like a few seconds. So, you know, the poll workers were really efficient getting everybody in.
That's great.
So, yeah, it was a surprisingly stress-free experience, which is kind of a nice end to a very stressful election.
Yeah. Carrie, thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Let's go to Gary from Bates City, Missouri. Gary, good morning.
Morning.
What happened with your experience this morning?
Well, I want to let you know, I went into Bates City, which is, for those who don't know, just east of Jackson County, out in Lafayette County, and it took, got there a little after 10 o'clock. It didn't take much more than 20 minutes to get through, although there were a lot of people there.
What did you think of the length of the ballot, Gary? There's a lot of amendments, a lot of issues to consider on the Missouri side, more so than a lot of elections.
I did the same as your previous caller and went through it, got downloaded it online and went through it at my own leisure and then knew what I was going to vote as I got in there.
That helps a little bit, right?
A lot. But what I wanted to let you know, as I was waiting to put my ballot into the reader, I was talking to the poll worker and said how it was nice to see so many people because normally it's quite light there, even on good elections, other presidential elections. And she said, yes, they normally on a good election will have a maximum of about 600 people there, and they had reached that number by 10 a.m.
Okay, that sounds good. Gary, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Lalani, if I'm saying that right, tweeted us this. It took an hour and a half to vote this morning. I assume she's on the Missouri side, but made some new friends and ate some donuts along the way. Glad to hear about that. That's a nice way to vote. Let's go back to some calls at 816-235-2888. We're looking for information on what you're seeing out there at the polls this morning. Let's go to Zachary from Gladstone. Zachary, good morning.
Good morning. I was actually in line for about an hour at a poll just minutes from my house, and I got all the way to the front, and they told me the computer system says I have to go to a different place, even though my address is registered at that address.
Oh, you're kidding. So did you do it? Are you going to do it?
Oh, yeah. It's my first year voting. I'm excited. The mood was actually pretty good, reiterating what I heard in the last call. It's just been a crazy election. But I'm happy to vote, and I'm happy for a long ballot. I get to be more involved in my own life.
Yeah, good deal. I'm glad you called, Zachary. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You know, Kyle, I always think there's something, you know, I love Election Day. I always wait to vote on Election Day. There's something, you know, maybe it's because I cover it for a living, but you get to the end of this very long process, and there's something of a relief, something sort of very wholesome and satisfying about going to the polls, and you're there with your neighbors, and people are chit-chatting, and it's kind of a cool experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, just listening to these callers, Steve, I don't know about you, but my faith in America has been restored in just the last 5 minutes. You know, not to wax too poetic, but, you know, it's nice to hear that voters have such a positive mood. And that's something that's been reflected in things we've been hearing all morning. In fact, I'll just play a really quick clip from another voter that we spoke to. Again, before dawn, this was Linda Reeves. She was voting at All Souls Church here in the Midtown area. And she was facing a long line. I think at that particular polling location, there were more than 100 people who were in line, and this was her attitude.
No, I was expecting to wait, and I'm glad to wait.
Why?
Because I'm glad that there's a good voter turnout. I come over here sometimes, and you can walk right in. There's no one here, hardly here, voting. So I'm really excited to see this long line. That means that people are participating.
That's called a good attitude, Kyle.
Yeah, and I mean, it's echoed in the other callers that have just called. Now, of course, it's not to say that there aren't problems. The last caller from Gladstone said he waited in line for 90 minutes and then got turned away because the address that he had didn't match up with the polling place. We are hearing about little individual problems like that, and we're going to get to that more with Laura in just a second.
That's pretty typical on a voting election day, a major general election like this. There's always going to be a few snags here.
But what I will say is, so far, we're not seeing any major systemic broad-based problems. We'll continue to monitor that monitor that all day, and we'll let you know how we're going to do that in just a few minutes. But yeah, at the moment, individual problems certainly, but it's nice to see and nice to hear that voters in general are meeting that with a sense of graciousness.
So where are you going to watch the returns tonight? Are you going to stick at home with your new family, your new baby, or what are you going to do?
Well, yeah, so my mother-in-law, my parents are coming over. We are actually planning a very small, intimate election night party because, as you noted, my wife and I have a new son who's just about 2 months old. So this
is
going to be
cool.
His first presidential election, though he won't remember a second of it. So we're just going to sit down, relax, and watch as the returns come in. Also, bear in mind, I have to get up at 3 the next morning. So we may not even know a winner at 3 when I get up, but I'm going to have to go to bed pretty early.
Well, if you want to know where the wild times are going to be, I always turn to Laura Spencer from KCUR
well,
to
I'll
find
stick
out
around.
Where the real action is going to be. Laura, where are you going tonight? What are you and Frank going to do to
Thanks.
Watch the returns?
Thanks, Steve. Well, Frank Morris will be out reporting. And
Frank Morris is your husband who works here as well.
That's right. And I will probably be at home with my son watching the television. So, so excitement.
Excitement. Okay. Let's go back to some phone calls here. We still want to know what you're seeing out there at polling places around the metro. Let's go to Karen from Liberty. Karen, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Hey, I voted about an hour ago in Liberty, and I just wanted to note that the line actually went very quickly, but when I got in there, I realized the reason it was going quickly is because, 90% of the people weren't using the voting booths. They were just sitting at tables voting without the privacy part. And so I waited for a voting booth because that made me more comfortable, but I think people were just voting however they wanted to vote, like on the tables and stuff like that.
They were filling out paper ballots, Karen, if I hear you right?
Yes, it was all paper ballots. We didn't have any electronic ballots at my at my voting site.
Yeah.
So I was very surprised because I wanted the privacy, but evidently everyone else felt really comfortable. And it is a super long ballot, so just filling out the ballot takes a while.
No kidding. I'm glad you called. How are you going to watch the returns tonight, Karen?
You know, I actually have a meeting at church tonight, which was not canceled. So I guess I'm going to go to that meeting and then rush home and just watch it with my family and hope that we do know a winner early, because that's what I would like, is to just have it be very decisive, whatever the answer, whatever the election is.
Sounds good.
Good for us all.
Karen, I'm glad you called. Thanks very much. Yeah. Let's go to Sam from the Columbus Park neighborhood in Kansas City, Missouri. Sam, good morning to you. You're on Up Today.
Good morning, Steve. My wife and I, we went to the polling place about 10 minutes before 6 o'clock this morning. We brought our 10-month-old son, so it was a family affair. And there was already a pretty long line. You had a lot of older folks there. That definitely makes sense because my dad's an older fella, and he's voting that early over in St. Louis County. So it's a definitely multi-generational family experience, but
I was going to say, if there's one time you'd know there's going to be a line, it would probably be at 6 a.m. when the polls open, because some folks like to be there right when it opens and get the whole thing over with.
Yeah, and that makes sense with what some of the other callers have said. It seems like the mornings are probably one of the busier times. So, it seems like everybody was pretty – it looked like a lot of folks knew each other, too. So we had a lot of neighborly hellos, and everybody was kind of hanging out before – it opened up, but once it got going at 6, it was a pretty efficient operation. Everybody got it was mainly paper ballots, and you got in and out of there.
Sam, I'm glad you called. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kyle, long lines are destined to be part of the legacy of today because of the projections that we're going to have, record turnout or close to record turnout in Missouri today, maybe even topping 70%. That's just extraordinary. There have been all kinds of projections as to what the impact of the Trump-Clinton race would be on voter turnout. It sounds like people are determined to get out and vote despite the rough campaigning we've all experienced the last couple of months.
Yeah, and we've noted several times on this show just how much is on this Missouri ballot. Of course, the Kansas City Election Board estimating that for a voter who comes to the polls unprepared, that is someone who hasn't really done their homework,
31 minutes.
It could take them upwards of 30 minutes to fill out the ballot. But there's a lot of important things on the Missouri ballot, not just president, as you mentioned.
Absolutely.
Of course, governor, a U.S. Senate seat, both of those races hotly contested. Coming into today, virtual dead heats.
Coin flips.
According to the recent polls. Not to mention other statewide offices like Secretary of State and Attorney General, numerous seats in the state legislature, and then 5 questions for constitutional amendments. So it is a pretty hefty document for voters to comb through, and they better be prepared for it. Or, yeah, they could spend a long time at the ballot place. But that's certainly what's driving turnout and what will drive turnout in Missouri. Not to mention all the issues on the other side of the state with judicial retention elections and every single seat in the state legislature nominally up for re-election. Some are uncontested, but you know, a lot of people, and the third district congressional race between Kevin Yoder and Jay Seide. So a very, very interesting election here in 2016.
Two things are true. It's a big day and elections matter. I believe that just firmly. Rick from South Kansas City, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for hosting this show. It's, I think it's very important for our people to hear what's going on as it happens. My experience is we're basically at 131st and State Line in Missouri. The poll was much more crowded than normal, but it was very efficient. There were only about four or five people in line because most of the people were already at tables. We were very disappointed that there was only one electronic machine. There must have been, as I said, 15 people at tables filling out paper ballots.
Wow.
But it operated very smoothly. We were able to vote, the two of us, in less than 20 minutes, but we were also prepared.
Okay.
We knew how we wanted to vote.
Those electronic machines, and, Rick, they cost money. They're expensive, and to load up on those would be a significant capital outlay for your county, for your state. Depends on how those things are paid for.
Well, you know, there are a lot of things that are significant expenses, and people not feeling comfortable at the poll in less than ideal conditions is a cost that we have to figure in. It's not financial, but it certainly is a cost to our way of doing business
as
a country.
Good point. Rick, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Russ from Bonner Springs. Russ, you're on Up to Date this morning.
Hello there.
Hi.
Yeah, my polling place is Linwood, and Leavenworth County is, you know, pretty efficient. They've got electronic machines, but they're not the hackable kind, and they report that that's a relatively small catchment, so there's not a lot of people that runs very quickly. The only real fly in the ointment is I morbidly fear that one of the two will win. So aside from that, everything's just fine.
Pretty good chance that's probably going to happen, Russ. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure how I feel about that.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
Russ, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Kyle?
Yeah, well, I mean, Russ echoes some other sentiments we have been feeling, hearing this morning from voters. We are, of course, in this segment, hearing a lot of positivity, a lot of enthusiasm. Of course, the people who are calling in, the people out voting, are probably a select population. It's kind of like polling the choir about the preacher's sermon. We are hearing that same kind of hint of worry, of anxiety. And there was a voter we talked to earlier today, Cameron Davis, who voted at a polling place near Swope Park, saying a lot of people in his social circles were not enthusiastic about voting.
Some people like voting. It doesn't make sense. Like, our votes don't count. Like, I tell everybody, our votes do count. So you got to vote.
So he's trying to get his friends out there, but there is that not so subtle underlying strain of anxiety in this election.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. You can also tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. We want to know what you're experiencing this morning as you're voting at polls all over the metro. I mentioned earlier that KCUR's Laura Spencer joins me here in the studio. She's been working on a project called Election Land. That's a collaborative project in which KCUR is participating with a host of other media outlets. Laura's our point person on this project today. And Laura, so good to have you here.
Thanks, Steve.
What is Election Land exactly?
Well, it's a project that was started, a collaboration between ProPublica, also Google News Lab, WNYC, and the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. And so folks, all over, about 400 reporters from more than 200 news organizations have signed on. And what we've signed on for is kind of help tracking different topics from long wait times to voter intimidation. They'll be notifying us. These students have this pop-up newsroom, and they'll be notifying us if there are problems in our area.
So this is the voting experience being chronicled all across the country.
That's
here,
right. Any voter problems. And so they'll be searching through Google and also Twitter and you know, all sorts of social media to, and also verifying those news tips for us before they send them along.
Any sense, any reports in yet about the Missouri or Kansas experience that you've noticed, or is it too early in the whole process?
So far, we've just gotten a few so far about, you know, St. Louis had some electronic ballot boxes that were having problems, just as we've had reports of that so far in Kansas City, too. But nothing too big so far in either Missouri or Kansas that we've seen from election.
And your job with this project today is doing what exactly?
Well, I'll just be kind of keeping track. They have this terrific map, Google Trends, things that people are searching for. And so far in Missouri and Kansas, it's mostly people are looking at provisional ballots. But we'll be keeping a close eye on if there are any issues of voter intimidation or, you know, widespread concerns about any electronic or folks not being able to vote.
Can voters go online and look at what Election Land is reporting today?
That's right. They're asking folks if they're having any voter problems to text ElectionLand into the number 69866. You can also report problems to KCUR by tweeting us at KCUR or sending us a Facebook message. And then the Google Trends map is available at the ElectionLand website, so folks can look at some of the searches that people are doing all over the country.
That's 69866 if they want to text something, you said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sounds good. Laura, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Lots of folks want to talk about what they're seeing out there today. Eleanor from South Dakota. Eleanor, thanks for calling Kansas City. Nice to hear from you.
Hi, thank you. I'm volunteering here in Independence, Missouri, as a canvasser, and I wanted to mention that a number of the voters that I spoke with were saying that they didn't think they were going to be able to vote because they were not able to stand in line, and they didn't get an advance ballot for whatever reason. They were not aware of curbside voting, which is an option in Jackson County. Curbside voting means that a helper stands in line for them. They park their car as close as they can to the entrance to the polls. The helper takes their ID and stands in line. When they get to the head of the line, they just tell the judges that or the poll workers that they have someone who needs to vote in their car.
This is someone who maybe you can't get out, isn't mobile, they can't walk very effectively, so they come out to the car and you can cast a ballot that way, you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. One family I spoke with, they wanted to exercise that option because whereas the man actually felt well, he had a chronic cough and he was not at ease in public because people thought that he might be contagious. So he wanted to use the curbside voting for health reasons.
Eleanor, you're from South Dakota?
Actually, I'm not from South Dakota. Steve, I have been in the Kansas City area for the best part of my life, most of my life.
Okay.
However, I voted in South Dakota this year and last year because once I retired, I thought that it would be a good idea to change my domicile. It was a bad idea. I'm coming back to Independence this year.
I'm glad we straightened that whole thing out. Eleanor, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Stephen from Independence. Stephen, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Stephen.
Good. Thank you so much. I went to, I'm in Independence, Missouri, and I actually ended up going to two different locations today because I had to go to my polling place, and then I took my mother to her polling place in Independence, and I had a similar experience in both places, which I thought was really interesting. In both places, there were folks in line that started kind of electioneering or talking to the other folks in line about who they were going to vote for and why and what they were excited about voting for and why not, that sort of thing. And then other people in the line stepped in and said, no, this is not the time, this is not the place, this is supposed to be private. If you're going to have those conversations, you need to step outside.
Ah.
And that happened in both places. And I thought that that was really interesting because there was all this talk, or there has been all this talk, about the integrity of, you know, the electoral polls and things like that. And I just thought it was interesting that, you know, folks kind of stepped in for themselves and for the other people around them to make sure that, you know, folks felt comfortable waiting in that line.
That's interesting.
It was a really interesting experience.
So you thought it was a good thing, Stephen?
I mean, yeah, I thought it was a good thing. I think people are trying to make sure that other folks feel comfortable and nobody feels like, they're being singled out or right. anything like that. It was really interesting. I just recently moved back to the Independence area. I was living on the West Coast for a long time, and this was my first time in a polling area. I've only ever voted by absentee ballot, so it was kind of an interesting experience to see how people took care of each other in the polling space.
Thanks for calling, Stephen. I appreciate it. Sarah from Gladstone writes, we waited 45 to 50 minutes in line at the library branch at Antioch. 8AH tweeted us, just voted at Mid-America Nazarene. Very quick. I was so excited to cast my vote for the first woman president. Josh reported through Twitter, lines at University Academy are long, at least an hour-long wait. Handicapped woman in front of me left, couldn't stand that long. So hearing some folks who can't wait as long as they have to cast a vote, Kyle.
And just quickly following up on what a previous caller mentioned, we kind of looked up curbside voting in Missouri. This is a reality. Voters with limited mobility can vote curbside or outside the polling place. As it says, just go to your polling place, ask someone to go in, and ask poll workers to bring a ballot out to you. They should bring you a ballot within a reasonable period of time. So if you are of limited mobility, if you are disabled or handicapped, or if you just have trouble standing in line for long periods of time standing up, then certainly do that.
Thank you for clarifying that. M.M. Cecina with this tweet, waited an hour, 20 minutes, have been voting for 40 years, have never had to wait in a line like this. It was a South Kansas City polling place. Okay, just a couple more calls here. James from Kansas City, Missouri. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks very much for the show. I just wanted to echo what had been said earlier and about the curbside voting. I'm really glad that was brought up. And also for anybody who's listening and has concern over the length of the ballot and time left in the day, I just wanted to reiterate that, you know, Kansas City metro area has free public transit today. If you're in need of a ride.
Good point, James.
To make sure that if younger voters or anybody who uses Uber, they have access through that. They can help you find your polling location through that. And that when you get to your polling spot, if you, aside from curbside, every place will have a sample ballot available for you if you're in a line. So if you haven't had a chance to look at your ballot yet, you can see a sample ballot while you wait in line and review it. So I just wanted to offer that up because I think I had a good experience this morning, but understand the lines are long and people are coming to and from work. And wanted to also say thanks to the Kansas City Board of Election, who do a great job considering they don't have early voting and they got a big day.
James, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go to Rhett from Peculiar, Missouri. I've always struggled with Peculiar, Missouri. Rhett, good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It is a strange town.
I'd have a hard time if I lived there, right? That's a hard word to say.
Yeah. Well, I actually go to Mizzou. I go to college at Mizzou, and I drove back this morning. I got up at about 8, which is probably pretty late for you guys, but pretty early for a college student. And I drove, you know, 2 hours back to my polling place in Peculiar, and the whole process there, I mean, it was really efficient. It took me about, I don't know, 20 minutes just door to door, more or less, you know, in and out.
Right.
And now I'm going back, and I don't know, just from my social circle, it sounds like a lot of my friends have either, you know, done their absentee ballots or are also, you know, doing like me and coming back and gonna get out and vote, which I think is good for, you know, our age group.
I do too, Rhett, because of course you guys don't vote in numbers as great as older folks, and so I'm glad you did it. Thanks very much.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Okay. Well, let's wrap. That wraps up our coverage of what's going on at the polling places this morning. Obviously, lots of activity out there, lots of folks showing up to vote. It's an exciting day in Kansas City. I'm glad everyone out there is casting ballots. It makes a difference. And thanks to Kyle Palmer for sticking around. Laura Spencer, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, time for a break. We come back, and we're going to switch topics dramatically. We're going to talk about a mystery writer you may not have ever heard of before, but maybe you should have. His name is Peter Straub. I'm Steve Kraske. And you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're we're back. On yesterday's program, we heard excerpts from American Public Square's discussion on civility in politics and how presidential responses to disaster have changed over the years. Listen to those conversations at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, who won and what ballot measures passed? We examine election results from both sides of the state line. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Peter Straub is one of those writers you may have heard of, you may not have, but KU professor John Tibbetts thinks a lot more people would enjoy the works of a horror novelist that he and many others consider as the equal to Stephen King. John Tibbetts has a new book out that amounts to an appreciation of Peter Straub. It's titled The Gothic Worlds of Peter Straub. John is an associate professor of film and media studies at the University of Kansas. He was a longtime film critic at this station, and John, it's always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Hey, Steve. Glad to see you.
You know, I don't read a lot of fiction. Still, I'm wondering, why didn't I know more about Peter Straub, whose name is familiar, but he obviously lacks Stephen King's towering status as the writer of horror in this country?
Even though they've worked together, and King himself lauds Straub as his superior, if not equal, in writing. I have to alert you to the fact that, just in case your listeners think that we're going to have a respite from today's politics, think again, because this is a gothic scene we are in that could be lifted right out of a novel by Nathaniel Hawthorne, Edgar Allan Poe,
what
or
do you mean?
Peter Straub. Yeah. Well, you know, darkness is spreading o'er the land, according to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. He reigns from his dark tower. His Trump Tower, like one of the evil magicians in Edgar Allan Poe.
Now, we won't get too political here today, John.
But there are buried secrets at every hand, and that's across the aisle. The gothic novel depends upon the disclosure of something that's been buried, something that's been wicked, something that's been hidden for too long and now must reassert itself. The sins of the fathers complex. And, you know, as we watch the politics in any season, we see how the buried secrets of the past will surface to somebody's benefit or displeasure, according to how you look at it. And so Straub's books are very much in that kind of vein. He could be writing about this election season. Ghost Story and The Talisman and other novels, some of which were written with Stephen King, all are about this idea of darkness over the land, buried secrets, some kind of a dark lord imperiling usually a fair number of women in the landscape, as a matter of fact. Doppelgangers, ghostly doubles, divided selves. Every politician will have a public and a private face.
What's your fascination with him? I mean, why a book on Peter Straub?
Well, I discovered his work about 30 years ago in a book called Houses Without Doors. I still think one of the great short story collections written by anybody in this last half century. Huh. And I was so taken by it that I communicated with him, wrote an essay about it, met him at various gothic, horror, and literary conventions around the country. And then when a chance from a publisher, McFarland Press, came up to write a book about him, I thought, now's the time. I already felt like I had a good handle on the subject. So I approached him, did more interviews. He has an archive of material at New York University. I think I may have been the first to access those materials, which are duly disclosed in the book. And above all, more opportunities to meet and talk with him. This is one of the great interview topics. You would love to have guy opposite you.
Sure.
He's literate. He's funny. There's an antic humor. He knows how to dramatize what he is talking about. A great storyteller. In short, everybody's prize subject for an interview.
Put him on the map for us. He writes about what, John?
He writes about Vietnam. He writes about tortured childhoods and traumas. He writes about psychologically conflicted characters. He writes about ghostly presences. Really ghosts, or are they remnants of some buried past, again, of traumas? He writes about modern men and women who are struggling in a world that has been torn apart. And the Vietnam stories in his trilogy, Coco, Mystery, and, he writes about Vietnam atrocities and trauma in all of his books. He does so in a way that makes his stories both politically and socially responsible. he's more like a guy like a John Cheever or even a John Updike, where the social consciousness emerges in what would seem to be more of a facade of weird and the horrific. And it reminds us that Nathaniel Hawthorne and Henry James, his two favorite American writers, themselves wrote in that manner. They were both socially responsive as well as masters of a good, disturbing story.
Well, he knows something about trauma in his own life.
Yes.
As a young boy, he almost bit it. What happened to him?
Yeah, he discloses that in this book. There had been a near-death experience when he was a little boy that resulted in months of hospitalization, months of trauma, later years, weeks and months on the psychiatrist's couch, trying to find out what happened to me as a child and how has that affected me now. And when you look at the stories, you see that this hovering on the threshold of life and death that occurred to him as a little boy has really never left him. And I think that has created in him a kind of shadow land. The world we live in is no more substantial necessarily than the world we dream about.
Yeah. I wonder if you can describe for us a scene or two out of any of his books that really have stuck with you and will be sticking with you for a very long time. Maybe something our listeners can relate to a little bit.
Well, you know, in the novel Ghost Story, which is probably still the most famous of
his books. His big bestseller that got him on the map, yeah.
And it's been filmed. We have four men who in years past were involved in a crime. Now, so many decades later, they are about to have to confront that crime when a young woman enters their midst who may or may not be the spirit of a woman who had been killed back in their past. The conflicts between them all are wonderful, and you have this setting of a Middle Western town that's going to be besieged by every manner of haunt, ghost, shapeshifter, vampire, weird beast of every description. And so the whole novel, Gothic, is a Gothic extrapolation of all of this stuff. And Ghost Story, in and of itself, I think, is a perfect representation of all of his work.
You know, that book, if I remember correctly, came out in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that time, he had been meddling in poetry.
Right.
I'm wondering, he's a poet. How does he get to become a bestseller with a book like Ghost Story?
I think he discovered that in prose was his best poetry, rather than the other way around. I think it's an astute self-insight that he acquired. And in reading and talking to Peter Straub, I suddenly realized I've got to be more conversant with John Ashbery,
mm-hmm.
Philip Larkin, Wallace Stevens, William Carlos Williams. He knows these people. He knows what
they
write about.
He studied them at the University of Wisconsin.
And his master's at Columbia was on mm-hmm. William Carlos Williams.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a challenge, in other words, to keep up with his numerous literary and poetic references. And the prose, it just sings. I mean, he is one of the great literary craftsmen that I know of in any vein of writing.
How does he write? Where does he write? Is he a fast writer? Is he a plotter? How does it work for him?
He's slow, slow, slow. He'll take years both to write and in between novels.
Unlike Stephen King, who kicks it out.
Well, I have a whole chapter on his collaborations with Stephen King, and how they describe each other is perfect. For example, Stephen King is the Dashiell Hammett of the thriller, whereas Peter Straub is the Raymond Chandler, the more poetic, slow-burning kind of writer. And these two men kind of come together, and what they create, Peter says, is not one voice or the other, but what he calls the voice of the book.
That's interesting.
Which is a wonderful way. And their two books, Talisman and Black House, really display the contradictory sides of how they both write and approach a story. And how these two came together is a miracle.
How did they come together?
And they're going to continue.
I was going to ask you. Yeah.
They met in London.
A long time ago.
King and his family were there vacationing. Straub was there with his family. They got to meet in some pubs and poetry reading houses. Hit it off, and next thing they knew, were communicating via, well, nowadays we would say they were doing it through the internet, but they were devising a communication system between their respective homes in Maine and New York, where they could communicate simultaneously and write these books, reading each other's copy, responding to each other's copy in turn. It's a very interesting story that I go into a lot. They were doing what writers can do now so easily with the internet.
So how do they put together a book as two authors writing one story? How does that work? And you assume with they have two men of substantial success, you wonder how they manage to corroborate successfully.
Well, they have found a commonality, I think, in this whole Gothic trope of one world that is pitched into rational and reason, and another world, which is one of dream and fantasy. They both understand both worlds so well. So both of these books that we're talking about, Talisman and Black House, are about characters who bestraddle two worlds. Now, both writers already know about the idea of an alternate world, of a dream and a reality interface. So going into their collaboration, they already were there to create two novels that are about just that. A character named Jack Sawyer will go from one to the other effortlessly as there are problems that are confronted in both, and both worlds are jeopardized by each other. It's a weird, weird idea, but they both are able to assume that posture, and they're such good friends. I never got any sense, and I interviewed Stephen King here in the book. I never got any sense from either one of them that there were major conflicts.
Do they edit each other? Because that's where the conflicts would arise.
Well, how do you edit either one of them?
Well, I was going to say.
It's more a question of, do we need this scene? The writing itself was seamless. Mm-hmm. But it's more a question of Stephen King maybe cutting him back, with Peter Straub maybe urging him to be a little more productive because of these two contrary ways of writing.
Yeah.
There seems to have been one of the more productive collaborations I've ever seen between two writers of equal stature like this.
I'm visiting with John Tibbetts about his new book, The Gothic Worlds of Peter Straub. You write this of him, John: Straub rarely loses sight of what is ultimately the most baffling, even horrific of monsters, the human animal. Yeah. Nothing is more monstrous and inexplicable than a mind divided against itself. How does that come through in what he writes?
Well, you know,
what an interesting idea.
You've got the prototypes, William Wilson and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right.
Straub just picks up on this. I think it's that whole buried secret idea. It's hard for us to understand other people, but it's harder for us to understand ourselves. We have denied so much that has happened to us. We have denied the implications of things we have done. We have shielded ourselves from the traumas and nightmares of our own past. He's not letting anybody off the hook, by the way. We have done that so successfully that what we call horror fiction is simply the disclosure, the fact that we're about to come face to face with ourselves, and it's with a self that we may not recognize. Now, both Straub and Henry James have written stories that are very similar. James is The Jolly Corner, and Peter Straub's novels, they all are about somebody who is literally haunting their own house. I mean, what an idea. Mm-hmm. It's the living who haunt their houses, not the ghosts.
So
and it's the living who will confront the might-have-beens or the buried selves that we are in reality. And that confrontation can be very disturbing.
You know, I've read that Peter Straub is never happier, John, than when he's in the midst of writing about some cruel sociopath in one of his stories. Explain that to me. I mean, why is that?
Well, the serial killer is a huge contribution of Straub to literary fiction. He's been at this since since the early to mid-70s. And he sees in the serial killer, again, this person who doesn't understand himself and who is acting upon impulses of a darker nature that he has no control over anymore. He's lost a kind of balance between the rational and the dream. So the serial killer is a standard topic of him, and he writes about fictional serial killers, real-life serial killers. The novel Coco, which is his Vietnam novel, is about a serial killer who was born, in a sense, in the jungles of Vietnam. Other novels are serial killers who are born out of abuse and molestation when they were young. We are not ever able to escape from these traumas, but in the case of the serial killer, they will try to confront what happened to them in ways that make them as dangerous as the people that had impaired them in their boyhood in the first place.
Yeah.
It's a scary idea, because none of us are, hey, look at the headlines. Oh, our neighbor, he was so quiet. He was right. So well-behaved.
Right.
Well, Straub specializes in that. I wouldn't say he's never happier than when he's writing these, but he's never more self-fulfilled, I think, than when he's writing about characters like these.
You also say this of him, John, the secret that resides in the life and work of the man who has written some of the darkest, most complex, and most disturbing tales of literary horror is that Peter Straub is a kind, generous, and sensitive man, esteemed among his peers and would-be writers alike. Moreover, he's funny. He yeah. smiles a lot. I probably shouldn't be surprised, but I was.
It's amazing.
Were you?
He is hilarious. In the interview with him at the back of the book, this comes forth in spades. He is so funny. And once you get past some of the horrors of the novels, you see that everywhere there's an antic humor. I call him the Merry Prankster of weird fiction writers. This novel, The Floating Dragon, which is his ultimate extrapolation of gothic horrors, is actually quite funny. Yes. And he will tell you so. And it's a little bit like looking at Jaws. You don't realize the movie is actually really funny, but and the Texas Chainsaw. You have to get past the surface horrors to realize that you really are dealing with really dark satires on the American family.
Is that what Jaws is?
Well, I think that's what Chainsaw is.
That's what Chainsaw is. Okay.
Jaws, I think.
I've never looked at it that way before.
Jaws, yeah. I think, is a novel of high adventure straight out of Robert Louis Stevenson.
Say, yeah.
When they head out in the boat and you have John Williams' music sounding the clarion call of we're off to a great adventure. I mean, this is really quite amusing, you know?
Well, if somebody wants to get into Peter Straub, you've piqued their interest, what should they look at? What books would you recommend?
Well, aside from my book, of course.
Well, besides from your book, of course.
Houses Without Doors. It's always going to be in print. And it is the best introduction because you have short fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So you have more bite-sized chunks of the larger feasts that are to come, because his novels are, most of them are quite long and
yeah.
quite complicated. The stories in Houses Without Doors, I think, will remain for me one of the great works of American literature in this century. And I tell everybody I know, go get that book if you want to check this guy out.
That's John Tibbetts, whose new book, The Gothic Worlds of Peter Straub. John, thanks very much.
Well,
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. You can listen to previous programs and download our podcast. Just go to kcur.org/up-to-date. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up-to-Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. On tomorrow's show, we look, of course, at all these big election results. We'll learn more about the winning candidates and ballot measures from both sides of the state line. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, Ryan Hennessy, and Corinne Dorian. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Go out and vote, folks. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.